Last week, our book critic Maureen Carrigan recommended several novels for summer reading. This time, she has three lively nonfiction books to recommend.
In the summer of 1950, 11-year-old Susan Richard Shreve traveled from her home in Washington, D.C. to a rural haven in Georgia, where water play, group sing-alongs, and co-ed hijinks reigned. It sounds like summer camp, but Warm Springs was, in fact, a retreat with a mission to heal the spirits and bodies of Americans who'd been afflicted with polio before the Salk vaccine was developed in 1954. Shreve, who's the author of 13 novels, has written an engrossing, somewhat offbeat memoir called Warm Springs about the period between ages 11 and 13 that she spent at the famous sanitarium, where she seems to have been the reigning mistress of misrule. In an anecdote that encapsulates the dopiness and high drama of adolescence, as well as the developing Shreve's outrageous personality, she recalls steering herself in her wheelchair into the boys' ward, where the charismatic Joey Buckley was lying in his bed, recovering from surgery. Shreve writes, "I cannot for the life of me understand now how I had the nerve or stupidity or exhibitionism to wear a sanitary napkin belt around my neck in full view of nurses and doctors and 18 adolescents in the boys' ward. It occurs to me now, considerably more embarrassed for myself in reflection than I was then, that the gesture was an announcement of desire." Shreve's voice throughout this memoir is wry and sometimes wistful when reflecting back on the extraordinary world of the sanitarium. She smoothly navigates between pity-repelling personal recollections and an encapsulated cultural history of polio in the U.S., particularly during the late 1940s and early 50s, when the power of positive thinking prevailed as a national credo. Throughout Warm Springs, she also pays homage to its founder, FDR, the country's most famous polio, as those who had the disease were then called. Roosevelt's hard-won belief in the benefits of what we would now call holistic treatment governed Warm Springs, and his jaunty spirit was everywhere, especially strong, Shreve recalls, in the dining hall, where a chair at the head table was always left vacant. FDR had a beloved first pet named Falla, a Scotty dog. Had he been alive today, the famous Falla no doubt would have penned or pawed his own memoir. Such is the current insatiable demand for dog books, kicked off by John Grogan's mega hit, Marley and Me. As someone who now finds herself the bewildered human handmaiden to a 7-pound Maltipoo puppy, I appreciate those Bowser books that aren't too cute, but instead capture the leaky, stinky truth of rollicking life with Rover. One such canine classic, originally published in 1923 and recently reprinted, is Thomas Mann's little-known waggish memoir about his dog called Bashan and I. I also toss a lifetime award of 3 liver snaps to John Katz, whose many books about dogs have always been enlightening and sane and have underscored the profound truth that dogs, no matter how much we love them, are not furry children. Katz's latest book is called Dog Days, and it's a chronicle, sometimes comic, sometimes mournful, about his life on Bedlam Farm in upstate New York, where he relocated from the suburbs about 3 years ago. In addition to 2 border collies and 2 labs, Katz also tends to donkeys, an 1,800-pound steer named Elvis who tries to sit on people's laps, sheep, goats, and chickens. Though Bedlam is a real working farm, Katz admits that these animals, which he writes about in thoughtful detail, are his main crop. If you harbor fantasies of living far from the madding crowd, Katz's accounts of delivering lambs on a rainy night over the protests of his disintegrating spine will talk you back down to reality. Like Susan Richard Shreve, I also live in Washington, D.C., a muggy, mosquito-ridden bog in the summertime. Teaching summer school some years ago, I'd walk home after classes and be so wiped out by the thick afternoon heat that I'd flop down, turn on the TV, and lose myself in crisp reruns of that highbrow British soap opera, Upstairs, Downstairs. Upstairs, Downstairs has long vanished from the rerun lineup, but I've found its literary equivalent in Juliet Nicholson's book, The Perfect Summer. Published last year in England to celebratory reviews, The Perfect Summer is a light cultural history of the summer of 1911, just before the storm of World War I. Nicholson's delightfully overstuffed account ranges from the ballrooms of the aristocracy, where eligible society maidens were advised to be gorgeous, decorative, and dumb, to the corridors of Parliament, where the inexhaustible Winston Churchill was making his mark, to the scandalous debut of the Ballet Russe, to the docks of London, where Ben Tillett led workers on a strike that paralyzed the shipping industry. As the granddaughter of Vita Sackville-West and Harold Nicholson, Juliet Nicholson is endowed with the right set of genetic calling cards to research a book like this. She's also savvy enough to acknowledge that the sunlit, perfect summer of 1911 wasn't perfect for every class of British citizen. But like the other books I've mentioned here, Nicholson's lively history makes for perfect summer reading.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Warm Springs by Susan Richard Shreve, Dog Days by John Katz, and The Perfect Summer, England 1911, Just Before the Storm, by Juliet Nicholson.